You're in tune to KZSU Stanford. It's time for another edition of Raising Sand.
You better get some mint Jones on me, baby. Take out some mint Jones on me, baby. 'Cause if you ever, ever say goodbye, I'm gonna hold right.
Welcome to another edition of Raising Sand Radio. I'm your host, Susan Gallimore, and it is my pleasure to bring you, days before the 2008 presidential election, voices of voters from the swing state of Colorado. We'll talk with Nadia Williams, who traveled to Colorado from California to get out the vote, and what she's been seeing there and what volunteers to get out the vote actually do. We'll also talk to George, who retired just outside Denver, Colorado, and he'll share his views on this presidential election and why he's voting across party lines for the first time in his life. Now, Denver hosted the Democratic National Convention back in August this year, and candidate Barack Obama will be making his fourth trip to the state this weekend, this time focusing on the city of Pueblo. And the New York Times has reported that the number of people voting by mail has exploded in that closely divided state up for grabs. According to the Times, the reasons for the spike include mail-in voting, anxiety over the state's voting machines, a state ballot with more issues and referenda on it than any in 96 years, and a deluge of advertising encouraging voters to avoid the long lines that plagued the polling places in 2004 and 2006. So far, 1.4 million of Colorado's 3.2 million registered voters have requested mail-in ballots. And then there are the candidates themselves. Democratic candidates Barack Obama and Joe Biden apparently appeal to many Republicans more than Republican candidates John McCain and Sarah Palin. Here are a few quotes from prominent Republicans. Jim Leach, former congressman from Iowa, states, "For me, the national interest comes before party concerns, particularly internationally. We do need a new direction in American policy, and Obama has a sense of that." Colin Powell, Secretary of State under Bush 43, said recently, "Obama has met the standard of being a successful president. I think he is a transformational figure. He is a new generation coming into the world, onto the world stage, onto the American stage, and for that reason, I'll be voting for Senator Barack Obama." Dr. Andrew Bacevich, who's a professor of international relations at Boston University, who we've interviewed on this show, says, "For conservatives, Obama represents a sliver of hope. McCain represents none at all. The choice turns out to be an easy one." Now, let's see if that's true in the state of Colorado from what Nadia Williams has been finding. And George, welcome to Raising Sand Radio.
Thank you.
It's good to have you with us. Thank you for talking with us about this topic. I know that it's probably not easy, but it's really wonderful to have you, George. So, Nadia, what is getting out the vote, and what do you do as a getting out the vote volunteer?
Well, to back up a bit, I was traveling outside of the U.S. Pretty much all of last year, and as November approached, knowing that I was going to return to the U.S. in September, I felt very strongly that I wanted to not just go back home to California, which is always a blue state, but to volunteer in one of the swing states, as apparently hundreds and hundreds of people are doing, leaving their home states to go to the swing states. So I'd had a little bit of experience, really not a lot, in mainstream political participation in my home city of San Francisco, mainly for state and local issues, supervisors, propositions, this kind of thing. So I guess the first time I really volunteered to walk a precinct was in the North Beach area of San Francisco in 1992 for me. And then sporadically I would do this. So I kind of generally knew that it's either canvassing door-to-door or going into the candidates or the party's office and making phone calls, either for donations, but mostly, you know, to encourage people to vote for your candidate or for or against the proposition that you're dealing with. And I haven't done any data entry, but I know that usually paid staff at these political offices would enter data that the volunteers, you know, had gathered either through their door-to-door canvassing or their phone canvassing.
So you're on the phones, but you're also door-to-door in Colorado.
I personally chose to do both. Some people just like to phone and don't like to canvass. I personally like to canvass. I like to, it's more driving around and getting in and out of the car constantly.
Mm.
But talking to people, yeah, that's what I like.
And that's how you met George?
Well, actually, no, I met George in the office. And, Jefferson County is a county that abuts Denver. I had been here in Denver just for a couple of days, but everyone said, oh, Jeffco is very, very important. And apparently Jefferson County is really quite diverse ethnically and economically. There's Latinos, there's African Americans, there's European Americans, whites, and the economic scale, ranges from low income up to upper middle class. I've canvassed in some condo areas. George was volunteering in the Jefferson County office, and we were phone banking together, and that's how we struck up a conversation.
So, George, how did you get to that canvassing office?
You know, I got a call from MoveOn.org a few weeks ago, and so I responded to the call, and they suggested I go to this office. It's actually in the city of Lakewood, which is in Jefferson County, and Lakewood happens to be the third or fourth largest city in the state of Colorado. So it's, it's pretty important. It's basically a suburban community of Denver.
This is the first time that you've been moved to do this.
That's correct. I've never worked on a political campaign before.
So what was happening for you?
Well, let me start off on a positive note. I liked the message of hope that Barack Obama has provided in his campaign. I like the fact that he's run a very positive campaign to get his message out. He didn't resort to bashing his opposing candidates. In other words, I found his campaign and his style of speaking to be refreshing. He's articulate, and he has a positive message to get across that resonates with me. I liked the kind of campaign advisors he's picked. I think he's picked a better vice presidential choice than his opposition. So all that put together made me want to vote for him. And I've already voted, and my wife has too. Needless to say, we voted for Obama.
What about your friends? Do you talk about this with your friends, and how are they, what do they look as though
they're
going to be doing?
A lot of my people that I associate with, maybe at my recreation center where I work out in the mornings, they are Republicans, and they're pretty hardcore conservative Republicans, and they're hard to turn.
Did you talk about it with them, or is it just better not to?
I spoke about it with them several times, and then I decided it was better not to talk to them about it.
Uh-huh. What is their reaction?
Varies from person to person. In some cases, we have a lot of hardcore conservative Christians here, and they're opposed to some of the abortion issues, for example.
So it's issue-based.
Yeah, and for some reason, they don't seem to trust Obama, which I don't know why, but...
Now, did you watch that infomercial that his team put out this last week?
I only saw portions of it. My wife and I were out when that came on. And so I guess the correct answer is no.
Uh-huh. Has there been any buzz around that amongst your friends, or they just didn't bother watching it?
I haven't heard anything. Those people that I was talking about at the recreation center, they watch Fox News, and I tune that out. But now in my own family, which is scattered several places in the United States, most people support Barack Obama, and they're pretty adamant about it.
A month ago, the state of Colorado was a red state, if you looked at the electoral map.
That's correct.
And then it sort of changed into the light blue, and now it's changed into the blue, which is very different for Colorado, isn't it?
Yes. I don't really know how much of that is due to native Coloradans and how much of it is due to an influx of people who moved here from other parts of the country, in Denver, in other big cities here. A lot of people have moved from California or from the big cities in the Midwest or the East Coast. And many of those tend to be Democrats. The Denver area is very much a growing area still. And as the city grows, its political affiliations are changing.
And so is there a sense when you're in... out and about these days and the last couple of days that there's a sense of energy around this election?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very positive energy in the campaign headquarters. There's excitement, enthusiasm. I'm very impressed by all that.
Yeah, when I go out canvassing, Susan, I think I want to back up what George is saying. There's, you know, a real feeling in the air, and when I go door-to-door or get a phone list, and if I see a Latino name, about 95% of the people, when I get a hold of them, are very strong Obama supporters. And I found this to be the same as when I canvass, when I go to a working-class Latino home. So I think the immigrants, people who come from the South to this country and have become citizens, are really adding, you know, a very positive, informed and, you know, rational voice. And then a lot of the young people, new voters, 18 and up, we find are strong Obama supporters. And many times I think, you know, they hold different political views than their parents.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a story about one particular person that you talked to that really struck you.
I'll go first, and then I'll let George,
okay.
I think we both have several, you know, great stories. I was out canvassing, and the weather's pretty hot here, and I stopped at a convenience store, you know, to stoke up on chips and some sodas and stuff to rehydrate, and I always wear my Obama pin, and the woman behind the counter started talking to me, and she said she'd been a Republican all her life, but this year she's going to vote for Obama, and she said it was her 12-year-old son who said, "Look, Mom, I want you to really think about voting, you know, that you told me that you're going to vote for McCain. Let's sit down together and watch the debate."
Huh.
I know. And then after the first debate, she tells me, he turns to her and says, "Okay, Mom, are you still going to vote for McCain?" And she wanted to, you know, to mess with him, and she said, "Oh, yeah, I think I still am going to vote for McCain." But then, I know, you know, a very bright kid. They talked some more, and she said, you know, she just had to agree with him that not only the issues but the personalities of both the candidates, and like George was saying, one offers, you know, a very positive message, an uplifting message, and she was, you know, frankly turned off by McCain taking the approach that he of just trying to tear down his opponent.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was a great encounter for me.
George, do you actually go out and canvass? Do you knock on doors?
I've been doing telephone work.
What are you finding on the phones? Are people receptive?
A lot of people who are labeled as undecided are receptive.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say maybe 75% of them are receptive.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Democrats are receptive. The Republicans, I'd say maybe 30% of the Republicans that I've called are receptive. The other 60 or 70% are not interested.
So, but no one is really hostile about it?
One or two. I've had some one or two hostile encounters. And the most hostile one was about the abortion issue, women's right to choose.
Uh-huh. This person was... pro-life, as we call it, as
yeah.
It's called. Yeah. We're all pro-life. This is the thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And I do want to comment about one of the volunteers in the office who's the veterans representative. He's a Navy veteran of Afghanistan and Iraq. He's a Republican, first time voting for a Democrat.
Mm.
And he's pretty staunchly a supportive of Barack Obama.
That's interesting, because one would have thought that being in the military, he'd identify more with McCain, but that's not the case here, huh?
Well, yeah, and there is a lot of that, Susan.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of the matter is that John McCain voted against increasing active duty troops' pay,
yeah.
And he voted against improving and increasing veterans' benefits 27 times during his career.
Now, that's a fascinating statistic, because I know I've used that with, I work a lot with the troops, and a lot of them are just find that incomprehensible. They don't actually believe it sometimes.
Yeah.
They think it's a propaganda gimmick.
Yeah, well, it happens to be true.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe when you hear John McCain speak. He sounds like such a patriot, and he sounds like he would be very supportive of the military.
Uh-huh. But, and in fact, the way he puts it, when you see him, he says, "Now look, of course I support the troops."
Yeah.
And it looks very real, in fact, but then when you actually go and look at the record, there it is in black and white, and it's
yep.
You can't avoid that.
So you've heard that before.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's a hard one. It's tough. Nadia, you've just been traveling in Vietnam. Let's talk about McCain's Vietnam record or presentation of that record.
Mm-hmm.
What did you find in Vietnam when you were there?
Practically every tourist, especially American tourists, goes to the prison where the American pilots were kept that were shot down as they were bombing Hanoi. And there's a Vietnamese name for the prison. It was started by the French. So it has a long history. It's called, in the French called it the Maison Centrale, their main prison. So before the, what they call the Vietnamese call the American War, it held Vietnamese fighters who were fighting French colonials. So it has a very, very long history. And McCain was held there. There's a whole room that has his parachute and his flight suit, because he was shot down and landed in a lake in Hanoi. And at information plaque, about the exhibit is very updated. The information card said that, John McCain, for the pilot, was held here for 6 years, from 1967 to 1973, and he is a 2008 presidential candidate in the United States. But, yeah, McCain was rescued from the lake by a Vietnamese man, and Mr. An, and I had many conversations with an American combat veteran named Chuck Searcy, who lives in Hanoi and heads up a de-land mining program. There are actually dozens and dozens of American Vietnam vets living in Vietnam, heading up programs like building schools and taking care of Agent Orange victims, trying to undo some of the damage that they unwittingly were part of during the war. So anyway, Chuck was a neighbor of Mr. An, the man that pulled McCain out of a lake in 67, and he arranged for the two of them to meet. I believe that was in 1996, when McCain made many trips to Vietnam, and to his credit, he did work on normalizing relations, but I suspect his sentiments are more with the South Vietnamese. Right, South Vietnamese government and military was backed by the United States, and they are mostly in the Saigon area, now called Ho Chi Minh City, the former capital of Vietnam. So a lot of business has been generated, especially from South Vietnam with the U.S. McCain came to Hanoi, and it was arranged for Mr. An to meet him, and it was a friendly meeting, but McCain is, I don't know, a bit standoffish, I guess, and then Chuck was really kind of stunned when McCain presented Mr. An with a paperweight. It was kind of like a souvenir that you buy in the basement souvenir of the Capitol building. He just didn't seem to be able to really extend himself to this man who not only pulled him out of a lake, but kept a mob at bay because people wanted to attack McCain. When he was pulled out, both his arms were broken and one leg was broken from hitting the water and having his plane hit. And one man from the mob rushed in and stabbed McCain, I think, in the ankle, and another hit him with a rifle and broke his shoulder. And a nurse came out from the crowd and started attending to McCain, and Mr. Ahn's quoted Ho Chi Minh, actually, who said, when these American bomber pilots are in the air, they are our enemy, but when they are helpless on the ground, they are human beings, and we must come to their aid. And then several years later, Mr. Ahn died, I believe in 2006. Chuck, who lives Chuck Searcy, who lives in Hanoi and knows the family, contacted McCain's office and said, you know, it would mean a lot to the family if you sent a letter, you know, of condolences to Mrs. Ahn. And that was never forthcoming. Mm-hmm. And McCain never visited in between that first visit, you know, after that first meeting with Ahn, although he came to Hanoi, you know, several times before. Mm-hmm. So I think that just, take it for what it's worth, you know. Mm-hmm. It just might be a comment.
George, do you have any concerns about Obama's readiness to take on the military aspect of the presidency, being the commander-in-chief?
Absolutely not.
Talk about that a little. Why?
He's not impulsive like McCain. He's deliberative. He thinks rationally about what he says and does. And I have a lot more faith in the kind of advisors that Obama has around him. Mm-hmm. For example, like Colin Powell. He's got a foreign policy expert in the form of his vice presidential choice,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to some political hack who comes out of nowhere like McCain's vice presidential mm-hmm. choice.
How's that been going down in Colorado? How's Sarah Palin being looked at, if you can generalize?
You know, a lot of people like Sarah Palin because of her religious views.
Mm-hmm.
She's a religious conservative, some people might say extreme. And she appeals to a lot of those ultra-conservative Christians.
Mm-hmm. She certainly has a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And she's very photogenic, it's true.
She's very photogenic. That was my first take on her right at the beginning. You know, being photogenic and being a good choice for vice president or even president are not synonymous.
Yeah, it's a little scary to think of Sarah Palin being the president of the United States, that's for sure.
Yeah, puts a little fear of God into me.
I have to say, it does me too.
Yeah. It's going door to door, I spoke to at least two Republican men who said when she was chosen, that swung their vote away from McCain into Obama.
And I've heard that too.
Yeah.
She was the last straw. The other thing I don't like about McCain is he's run from my point of view, a terrible, terrible campaign. I was talking to my wife about it. I asked her, I said, in all this time, has John McCain given you any reason to vote for him? And we couldn't think of a single reason.
Hmm.
All he's done, his whole campaign has been about personal attacks and bashing Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not a good reason for me to vote for him.
Mm-hmm. I think that story that Chuck Searcy, the American vet in Vietnam, told me, I think it's a reflection of that. Chuck said, well, frankly, he has a mean streak, you know. We've all heard about his temper. And, there just seems to be this kind of thread of kind of anger and vindictiveness that seems to run through him. That, like George says, I think it just turns people off, and it just kind of shows an aspect of his character that we might not want to lead one of the most powerful countries in the world.
That's right. We are not all Georgian.
And the thing that's interesting to me is that it's not just that we're not voting for McCain, it's that we actually are voting for a candidate that we can get behind. I mean, as you say, Obama has a clear intelligence, a very rational approach, but he also is a graceful man, isn't he?
He's graceful, and he knows how to pronounce nuclear.
George, what are your friends saying about the Bush administration? Have they been pleased? Have they been disappointed?
Well, actually, they try to say as little as possible, but reading between the lines, I'd say they're disappointed. I don't know what you could be pleased about. I have no idea. I mean, you know, we're in the midst of two wars. The economy is in the tank. We have a major American city that was flooded and is not rebuilt. Stock market's crashing. What could you be happy about?
We have $7 billion going to banks. It looks as more and more as if nobody is going to get bailed out except the banks and the bankers.
And the banks are using the money for mergers and acquisitions and for increasing pay of their major executives. I thought the money was earmarked to improve the credit situation and loans for other businesses, but they're apparently not doing that.
And that seems to be clearer and clearer in Colorado, where you are, that people are recognizing that
we've
been taken again?
Yes.
There doesn't seem to be a sense of outrage about it?
I mean, people have been outraged and outraged. Now they're just kind of, I can't think of the word, but...
Incredulous?
Incredulous. They're just kind of shrugging their shoulders. Another 2 or 3 months and we're done with this guy.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you're retired. You must know a lot of people that are retired who are anxiously looking at their savings going down at this point.
Yes, they are. Absolutely. And they're trying to take a positive face on it, you know, just to try to wait it out. Then there are a lot of other people who can't afford to retire right now. So,
has there been a lot of layoffs and unemployment in Colorado?
Well, there's a lot of high-tech companies that have laid off people here, but we don't have a major auto manufacturing plant or anything that's that closely tied to this administration. We have a lot of banks and insurance industry, and some of those people have been laid off, but so far I don't think it's been hit that hard.
But there's also a lot of military bases in the area, isn't there?
There are, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they're pretty safe right now.
Does it seem as though the troops there are fairly overt about being pro one or the other candidate?
My take on it, I don't know a lot of troops out here mm-hmm. right now, but my take on it is that they are probably pro McCain.
Mm-hmm. Nadia, have you run into any of the military personnel out there?
I haven't, but I've gone to a few homes where they had a son or a daughter in the military. And, I did have a very good conversation with a father. It was in the evening, and, you know, their house was festooned with a lot of, yellow ribbons, flags, and all that. And, of course, he had not only great concern for the safety of his son, but also I think people want their sacrifice to mean something. It's hard for people to accept the fact that, gee, my kid's life might have been put at risk or I might have lost my son for reasons of oil or power and control of major marts and all these kind of things, mm-hmm. and not the noble reasons that they were told. You know, we in California, and I think especially in Northern California, maybe the San Francisco Bay Area, would tend to be more to the left and maybe not able to talk to regular people, more mainstream Americans. And coming here to Colorado has been personally very good for me, because you have to approach people from a place of respect and listen to them. So I felt that this man, this father, was struggling personally and morally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had chosen to back McCain, but he was open to listening to other viewpoints, and I think people they hope that they've made the right choice, but they still might have some doubts, and they you kind of want to hang on to what you feel has been the right choice, but...
Let me just remind our listeners that we're talking with Nadia Williams in Denver, Colorado, and George, who lives in Lakewood, Colorado. We're talking about Colorado being a swing state, and this is Raising Sand Radio on KZSU Stanford, FM 90.1. Recently on the Rachel Maddow show, she interviewed Barack Obama, and she would like him to have been a little more... clearly not pro-Republican, and he was not going to take that bait. In fact, he said to her, he can tell that she'd like him to go there, but he's not going to do that. And he said, as far as he's concerned, you know, he's for the Republicans as well as the Democrats, but in his opinion, the Republican Party has been taken over by a subset of incompetence.
I actually saw that interview.
What did you think of that?
And he did take the high road. And I was very, very impressed with him.
Mm-hmm. But a subset of incompetence, an interesting description.
I think he's right on the money. I think if they're not incompetent, they're just downright evil. So, and you don't want to believe that. I mean, look at Donald Rumsfeld, former Secretary of Defense. For how many years was he Secretary of Defense, and he was in charge of the war in Iraq? And obviously, things were going badly. Now, granted, he had an agenda. He wanted to downsize the military, make it more efficient, make it use more high-tech gadgets. And his agenda was to prove that this could be done. And then when it became painfully obvious that this downsized military was not getting the job done, he refused to see it, and he continued down that same road. And George Bush refused to fire him.
Mm-hmm.
George Bush was stubborn. And so in his second term, he finally did fire him and brought on General Petraeus, who instituted a surge, which apparently does seem to be working to his credit.
Petraeus just became the commander of Southcom, so he's now head of both wars.
Right.
What I've heard, Susan, and I don't know if you've interviewed anybody on your programs, but... from what I understand, there's a lot of payoffs in Iraq towards the two groups that are fighting each other, the Sunnis and the Shias. And I understand there's, for quite a while, there's been negotiations with the Taliban and actually giving of money to keep them from fighting each other so that the situation does look better and that there is less violence.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
what I'm
the
hearing,
credit
too.
Can be taken, for the surge. Have you heard about
that? Heard about that. And, I mean, the thing is that when you start handing out money, where's the incentive to stop receiving it, right?
Right. As soon as they stop giving the money, it's going to explode.
Right.
Yeah. And the financial payoffs were very much in play as the U.S. was going into this war in March of 2003 to get, let's say, Poland on board. There was a lot of grants that didn't need to be paid back that were given to Poland and other countries that, you know, are have a tough economic time. Georgia's been on the U.S. dole for quite a long time, and especially these countries that ring the former Soviet Union, the former republics like Georgia, and then the countries of Eastern Europe like Poland and Czechoslovakia and Romania and all these. The U.S. pretty much started moving in on them with Cheney in 91. And they would like to install pro-Western governments that will accept U.S. military bases and be part of the U.S. military plan.
Joseph Stiglitz, Nobel Prize-winning economist, recently predicted that this deficit is going to go up to about $10 trillion.
Oh.
So the person who does become president has his hands full, let's face it.
Right.
And it's going to be hard for people, I think, to realize that he's not a miracle worker, whether it's McCain or Obama that becomes president.
Yeah, I was afraid of that.
They're really going to have to do a very clear indicator that we're all in this together and that, you know, government and the people are going to actually have to work very closely together, aren't they?
Yeah. It's a huge mess, and And Obama has, he wants to give Americans health care and financial security and have them keep their homes. And that's going to necessitate big economic changes, and it's going to have a lot of opposition.
Need a lot of opposition.
All the banks, insurance companies, HMOs.
Corporations.
Major corporations, absolutely, mm-hmm. are going to have him in the crosshairs and going to try and, put up walls to prevent. And then he'll look bad because he won't be able to deliver on the promises.
What I really appreciate about the way he's been doing his campaign, as George already pointed out, it's been a very well-managed campaign. But he also talks about these things. He doesn't try and shrug them off. I mean, there certainly are things that neither candidate is talking about, immigration, for example. Mm. There are certainly things like that that we just have no idea where we're going to, you know, how that is all going to pan out. But on the economy, he has sat down, Obama has sat down a couple of times and said, look, we're in a tough situation here, and we're going to have to work together. And I appreciate that. It's not this business as usual, we will take care of you, all you people have to do is listen to us.
Right.
Well, on the positive side, if Obama's elected, as it now seems almost certain, he may have Democratic houses on both sides. The House of Representatives, and if that's so, if he has working majorities in both houses, he might be able to get an agenda. So it might come down to setting some clear priorities of what he wants to do. And Obama has the kind of methodical personality that I have faith in the fact that he can probably do that. Unlike 4 years ago when George Bush spoke at the inauguration or the State of the Union address, and he stated, I have political capital and I'm going to use it, and he wasted it on the third rail of politics, privatizing Social Security.
Boy, you imagine if that had happened.
Yeah, right.
Where would we be now?
Yeah, exactly.
Unbelievable.
So I think that Obama will handle that much better, especially if he has any kind of a honeymoon period at all in his first 90 days or 100 days, you know.
Let's hope he does. I see whoever comes in there having to hit the ground running and then just never stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why people look to his youth, his obvious intellectual capacity, and then they look at McCain and they think, you know, who's going to be able to handle this huge job, you know?
Yeah.
Who's really, you know, qualified and prepared? And I think there's really not much question.
But also, as Colin Powell pointed out, this is a transformational figure. I mean, that's a very big word to use.
And it is.
It seems clear that Obama has it in him to transform things.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, Susan, that he really has stimulated this unprecedented number of volunteers nationwide. I heard a couple of weeks ago that 250,000 people are volunteering for Obama, and I do not doubt that at all. I think actually these next couple of days it might even surge way more than that, because I sat next to a woman yesterday from Texas, African-American woman from Texas, and she'd been planning for months to come to Colorado, and she came on a bus that was chartered specifically to bring Texans to Colorado.
To get out the vote?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Buses have left Houston and Dallas for all the swing states.
But we have people from Texas, California, Washington, D.C. We have a lady working in the office from London.
Oh, my.
They're just from all over the place.
Yeah.
And
that's good to hear.
I'm really impressed with how much people care about their country, that they would sacrifice the income and take the time to go somewhere that they don't live to try to influence the election. I just would have never thought of that. I live here.
Yeah.
So I'm volunteering, and it's no big deal. I'm just I lived maybe less than 10 miles from the campaign headquarters.
But, I mean, for you, it's not so much a trip of distance in physical distance. It's a real change. It's a real trip in political distance, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and in that way, George has come a lot further than, you know, than many of us. Yeah. And very, very commendable. Yeah.
And you're in that office, and you go home, and you are able also to be around your friends or the people that you know, the people at your senior center, who are not on the same page as you, and you still maintain your relationship with them. I think that's really terrific.
Either I seethe,
seethe
about how much I disagree with them, to put it kindly, or else I just don't talk to them about it.
Yeah, I mean, this is also kind of what we need to do with one another. As Nadia pointed out, in the San Francisco Bay Area, we are more of a birds of a feather, but when you get out into a different state and the nuance is different, the culture is different, you do have to adjust. And, you know, I think that if we can do that and still maintain this sense that this is a human being that has ideas that are different to ours, this is what Obama is talking about, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, when I moved here, I've been a resident of Colorado for the past 10 years. When I moved here, I was politically conservative, and I was very comfortable with the conservative leanings of the people around me. I was very happy with it. But I think that in the past 8 years, things have changed. Either through the incompetence of this administration, or a lot of Republicans feel like they've been abandoned and double-crossed by this administration. Mm.
So there was never a factor, one particular factor that put you over the top. It was a long series of small...
It was an accumulation of things.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
And I enumerated them, a couple of wars that were badly run, one of which was totally unnecessary. Poor appointments at the highest levels of government.
The shrugging off of the crisis in or the tragedy in New Orleans by saying "heck of a job, Brownie," become infamous, hasn't it?
Yeah.
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 Yep.
Well, I want to thank both of you for being with us and on Raising San Radio. It's really great to have your voices, to bring these voices to the air, and to have people understand what it is that has you, George, looking at a totally different decision this political season. And Nadia, to get out there and walk the precincts, go door to door, find out who these people are, find out what they're thinking. It's really great to be able to bring this to our listeners.
It's been a great 3 weeks, and so glad I did it. Well worth it. Susan, can I just throw in, before we wrap up, I gleaned a few stats. Kind of wanted to give a little shout out to Northern California and the San Francisco Bay Area, because George and I volunteer. It's a pretty small office. It's about 20 people, at any one time, paid staff and volunteers. But there is a whole bunch of people from the San Francisco Bay Area, all young people, mostly males. We call them the Bay Boys. But there's a couple of young women and an older woman like me. So I think California is really showing its colors, and I suspect that there's hundreds of people from all areas of California that are in swing states right now. I heard that there's an unprecedented number of new voters, 8 million. I think that's pretty accurate.
Nationwide.
Amazing.
Yeah, nationwide, exactly. And a lot of them young voters, and some even older people who've never voted before, but primarily Obama. And then I was canvassing the other day and spoke with a man who has really been surfing a lot of webs and doing a lot of, you know, a lot of homework. He said that, according to CNN, nationwide, 23 million early votes have already been cast. And 25% of those, about 6 million, have been tallied already.
Hmm.
And they are showing 57.8% Democratic, 42.2% Republican.
Hmm.
Okay?
Wow.
So the remaining 18 million have not been tallied yet, but those early votes are already showing, you know, that that slant. The early voting has been very, very important nationwide because of all the problems that we've seen in 2010, 2004 with the people standing in line till 2 a.m. Just a small comment about the abortion issue. I believe Democracy Now! Had the son of a very right-wing famous televangelist, Amy Goodman, had this son on, and he is still personally very strong against abortion, but warns against the extreme Christian right and said that actually under Obama's medical and social plans, there would be much less need for abortion. The choice of abortion is often an economic issue, and if you're destroying the economic security and safety for the vast majority of Americans, especially lower-income working Americans, there's going to be more of a demand and an incident of abortion.
Mm-hmm. Stands so to reason, that, doesn't it?
Yeah,
yeah,
it does. It does. I think that's a very important point.
A testimonial to how well organized the Obama campaign has been in Colorado.
There are like 51 or 52 of these campaign offices statewide in Colorado. And that's, I think, pretty unprecedented.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then he's going to, as I said earlier in the show, he's going to be there this weekend again.
Yes.
Yes.
Fourth time since the Democratic National Convention. So
yeah.
I think even though Colorado just has 9 electoral votes, I think a lot of the, both candidates have been, you know, paying a lot of attention to Colorado.
It's
considered important. And actually, just a couple more projections, Susan. Election officials nationwide project that this is going to be the greatest voter turnout ever, and it might even actually exceed 130 million votes.
Wow.
Yeah, cast in the U.S.
Wow, that's like a third, over a third.
Yeah, and one of the projections is as far as electoral votes, Obama 341 to McCain's 197.
Hmm.
Now it's going to be 3 days that we're going to find out how that shakes down. But this might really be a landslide.
Transformational election.
Yeah.
Let's hope so. I mean, I feel very excited about it myself, and on the cusp of something really new, the potential of which we just don't know, but it feels like it's the right direction, doesn't it?
Maybe it has to get so bad in order for people to wake up and really make a strong change of direction.
That was Colorado resident George, a Republican who will cross over for this election and has already cast a vote for Democratic presidential candidate Barack Obama, and Nadia Williams of California, who traveled to Colorado to volunteer to get out the vote for Obama. An update on the continuing story of Troy Davis. Last week I reported that Davis's execution, rescheduled for October 27th, had been stayed for the third time. The case has bounced around the judicial system, appearing before at least 29 judges in 7 types of reviews. The Georgia Supreme Court twice denied Mr. Davis a new hearing, and the United States Supreme Court and the Georgia State Board of Pardons and Paroles have issued stays of execution before rejecting his appeal. In deciding to consider a new hearing for Mr. Davis, the United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit in Atlanta asked his lawyers to prove that no reasonable person would find him guilty. If the appeals court agrees to hear the case, the stay of execution will continue until a decision is reached. If not, Georgia may proceed with the execution. Stephen Bright, a visiting lecturer at Yale Law School and president of the Southern Center for Human Rights, stated, "It's extraordinary for three stays to be issued in one case. Clearly, the case has been very troubling to each of the courts that examined it." He added that the outcome is difficult to predict because previous decisions in the case have been so close. You can go to Troy Davis's website at www.troyanthonydavis.org or Amnesty International's site at www.amnestyusa.org to learn more. Thanks for listening to today's show, and as always, views expressed are those of the host and guests and not KZSU or Stanford University. Join us next week for an update on the lawsuit against the chemical companies that manufacture dioxin defoliants used in Vietnam. One of these, Agent Orange, is responsible for ongoing illness and physical deformities in now four generations of Vietnamese. I'll air presentations from two delegates, both women living with the complications of Agent Orange exposure. One of them, now 20 years old, was born without legs due to her mother's exposure to Agent Orange. This is an ongoing story we cover at Raising Sand, and I hope you'll join me next week. And let's go out with Jimmy Reed, Take Out Some Insurance.
If you leave me, baby, say you won't be back, that would be the end of me, 'cause I'd have a heart attack. You better get some insurance on me, baby. Take out some insurance on me, baby. 'Cause if you ever, ever say goodbye, I'm gonna hold right off and die. Darling, and I will love you long as I've got breath. It would worry me to death. You better get some insurance on me, baby. Take out some insurance on me, baby. 'Cause if you ever, ever say goodbye, I'm gonna hold right off and die. Don't get no sick, an accident, 'cause I'm here as can be. If you got any sense, you take a hand and get a better life on me. You don't know me, baby, like I know myself. I could live if you should give all the love to someone else. You better get some insurance on me, baby. Take out some insurance on me, baby. 'Cause if you ever, ever say goodbye, I'm gonna hold right off and die.